This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Chris Eliopoulos and Mike Scopa.
Welcome back, Milers. I'm your host, Chris Eliopoulos, and with me, as always, is the Dean of Disney, Dr. Michael Scopa. Hi, Mike. How's everything?
How you doing, Chris? Everything's doing well. I'm kind of excited about today's show because I think it's going to be kind of a fun show for you. Ooh. And our listeners. I hope you have some interesting things to talk about.
Very exciting. Well, why don't we start off with some news? Give me some of the news that I didn't have time to look at this week.
Yeah, not too many big things, but there's a couple of interesting things that some people may be interested in. Walt Disney World is now offering a water park seasonal pass for Typhoon Lagoon and Blizzard Beach. It's $79 for adults and $73 for non-adults, kids, I guess.
Usually and those are non-adults.
I guess you can purchase. Yeah, those are non-adults. I guess you can purchase this seasonal pass now, and it's valid through the 24th of May, 2024. So for those people who frequent Typhoon Lagoon a lot, this actually is a good deal because one day pass apparently is around $69. So for an extra 10, you can go twice, three times during your trip. So nice. It's probably a good deal. But that was one of the interesting things I saw this week.
Nice.
They have been offering previews, annual pass holder previews for the Journey of Water in Epcot. And they ran into a little snafu. At first, they just had a standby queue, and then they decided they were going to need virtual queue. So now they have virtual queue set up for annual pass holders and such. And one of the interesting things that I heard this week, I think Michelle told me this, was that there were some people who were complaining about it because they apparently thought it was an attraction. And basically, it's just sort of a walkthrough area and celebrating Moana. So just for those who weren't aware, that's basically what it is.
So it's like it's like one of those walkthroughs. You know, those walkthroughs for the animal and the animal kingdom, but except for you look at water.
Yeah, you look at one and a few other things. I guess there may be a meet and greet there too. So that was that was another little tidbit. I think the most interesting tidbit for the week was that all of the Mickey's, remember, this is still September, all of the Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween party dates are sold out.
Wow.
They're all sold out except for one date. And this is interesting. The one date that's not sold out is November 1st, 2023, which is All Saints Day. It's not Halloween. So that's not sold out. And are you ready for this? An adult ticket is $199 for that night.
Wow.
So if you want to go to Mickey's Not So Scary after Halloween, and you really want to go, that's the only night you can go. $199 for adults, $189 for children.
We used to have this conversation about the rates and how eventually they would hit a point where it would be so expensive, nobody would want to do it. Well, I guess they haven't reached that rate because it's selling out early.
You know, the thing is that I guess it's how, I don't know if there, I'd like to know what the percentage of guests are that go every year. Because I certainly would not go every year, but every once in a while, maybe every 2 or 3 years, I'd go. But I don't think I would pay $199 because you really, and we've talked, I think we talked about this on the previous show, at least this year, the fireworks are nothing to write home about. The parade is always fun. I do not like the Hocus Pocus show. I really like the villains mix and mingle from years past. So I don't know if it's, I think to me, I think the breaking point would have been maybe 110, 120, 199. I can't see that at all.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So that was an interesting thing. You know, when Michelle and I were down there in August and they had the food wine festival going on, there were, I'd say about maybe 4 or 5 kiosks that were not open and they were not going to be open until September. So that was kind of bummer, but I noticed that they are opening up 3 kiosks. They may have been, they, by the time people listen to this podcast, they may have very well opened them. They're called Char and Chop, Wedge and Wine, and Bubble and Brine. And they're, they offer some interesting beverages, and seems to be, cheese seems to be on the, a lot of these menus. I won't go over them, but when people go to, if anyone going to Walt Disney World, they should get those little booklets and see what those little booklets have for information, and then they can navigate through the park. But I believe that with those 3 kiosks opening, Food and Wine is now in full glory. So
nice.
Good luck to all those who go down. I just would not go on a Saturday. I would not go on a Friday night or a Saturday afternoon, night, evening.
Yeah.
I would just recommend that. It's just too rowdy and too crowded. Let's see. Apparently, there's a new meet and greet at the Imagination Pavilion, and it includes Mickey and Minnie. So those who are going to Walt Disney World, yeah, the mice are back.
Well, so, that's why they have cheese on the menu at Epcot, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. So that's kind of interesting because a lot of people want to meet this person, Mickey Mouse. So it's Mouse, Mickey Mouse.
Right.
I had mentioned last week about Soarin' coming back. It is back, and one of my friends texted me. One of my friends who lives in Claremont said he went to Epcot this week, and he had never seen the original Soarin' film, Soarin' Over California, I guess it was called. And he said it was much more enjoyable than the CGI one that had been there for the last few years. So
I wonder who said that. I wonder who told him that. We're all...
I don't know. I wonder. Let's see. A few more things. You know how much I like Dole Whip.
Yes.
So let me see if I can frame this. There used to be a Starbucks place in Epcot when you would leave Discovery World or Future World, and you would head towards the Canada side of World Showcase. There was a Starbucks on the right. That has been removed. The Starbucks that was there is now in the eatery at the beginning of the world of Epcot when you walk in. But they have replaced it with something called the Swirled Showcase. And I wish it was open when we were there, because one of the things they offer, one of the items is something called liquid nitro cake. I don't know what that is, but I would love to have tried that. They also have plenty of soft serves and waffle cones, and they have all kinds of interesting beverages. One that caught my eye was called Frozen Apple Pie. So that's an interesting place to visit in Epcot next time you go. Let's see. The only other thing that I saw that would be of interest to people is that starting on Saturday, the Magic Kingdom Festival of Fantasy Parade will be performing once per day. It had been up to now performing at 12 noon and then at 3 o'clock. But starting on Saturday, it's just one performance and that's at 3 o'clock. So that's, as far as I know, Chris, that's about all the stuff that I thought would be interesting to our listeners and you.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
So that's the news for the week.
Love it.
So while preparing for the show, I was thinking of all kinds of things. And one of the memories I have of our past vacation in Disney in August is that Michelle had one of her doctoral students there to meet us. And they had a little girl named Zoe. And Zoe, 10 years old, charming young lady. And so Michelle and her student and her husband, they went on Tron, which was a little too much for Zoe and a little too much for me. So Zoe and I hung out together and we talked, and she was a very curious little girl and she wanted to know a whole bunch of things about Walt Disney World. So we sat down and talked, and I thought that some of the things that we talked about, some of which I may have mentioned before, some which I have not, would be of interest to you and our guests. So our listeners. So I thought maybe play a little trivia game and see if you can you can answer some of the things that I talked with Zoe about. So
I didn't know there was going to be a test.
If you're ready.
I'm worried now. I didn't realize there was going to be a quiz.
and again, you may know the answers to some of these things, and I'm sure there's going to be people out there that are going to be yelling at their podcast player. Oh, I know what that is. I know what that is.
But I don't know.
Here's the first thing.
Okay.
You might. If I asked you to tell me what what is the oldest thing in Walt Disney World, what would you say?
Mike Scopa.
Besides me.
The oldest thing in all of Disney or Magic Kingdom? Oldest thing.
All of Walt Disney World. The oldest item thing.
The carousel, right? The merry-go-round, whatever
it's
it is.
It's the carousel. That's right. Yeah. Okay. I don't know how many people realize that. Yeah. There's an interesting story about that carousel. That was, do you know how old it is?
It's probably 90 years old or so, right? Was it made 1930 or something like that?
It's 106 years old.
Oh, even excuse older. Me.
So because it was built in 1917. And funny, the name of the company that built it was the Philadelphia Toboggan Company.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting. They built it, and it was originally called the Liberty Carousel. The carousel was first shown, appeared, opened to riders in Michigan, which was interesting. It was opened. It was at an amusement park called Belle Isle, and it was in operation there for a while. Before it was then moved to your neck of the woods. It was in Maplewood, New Jersey. I don't remember what year it was. I want to say it was maybe 10 or 15 years afterwards. And that's where Disney saw it and they acquired it. Do you want to guess how many horses are on that ride?
Oh, not horses in its long history, but on the actual ride currently, right?
Yeah, how many horses can fit on? How many horses are currently on that carousel?
Oh, I'm going to take a stab in the dark. 20.
There are 18 rows, okay? And there are 5 horses in each row.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So what's the math?
That's
there?
90.
Wow.
That's 90. Go 5. So you got 5. You get 18 rows coming up from the center, and there's 5 in each row. So that's interesting. That's an interesting. I didn't think there was that many. I would have said 40 or 50, but now the other thing is that, and I don't know if this is an old wives' tale or whatever, but the story is that there is one horse on the carousel that is supposedly Cinderella's horse.
Right.
And do you know how that horse is identified?
Isn't there like a gold tassel or tail or something like that? Something on it is gold.
Yeah, it's doing well. There's gold ribbon around its tail.
Oh, yeah.
And that is supposed to be Cinderella's horse. Jim, our friend Jim Corcus told me a story one time how he, I think it was in Disneyland, he worked in Disneyland with the woman who was in charge of the carousel, and they would work on the horses. Maybe it was Walt Disney World. They would work on rotating the horses. I guess they have more horses than they had places for them. So they would remove the horses once in a while and paint them. They used gold leaf. And one of the things that was interesting was that Jim told me that he said, if you look very closely on some of the horses, you will see on the back haunches, you may see bows and arrows on them, because apparently it was supposed to, some of the horses represented colonial times and things like that. So he said that was pretty interesting.
Interesting.
So that's the first thing I wanted to mention to you. Now let's move on to, since we're talking about Cinderella, let's talk about the Cinderella Castle. We know that Walt Disney World opened in October of 71.
Right.
How long do you think it took them to build that castle?
I'm just going to, again, I'm throwing this one as in the dark, 8 months.
Higher.
Really? How long did it take?
Yeah. It took 18 months to construct that. And there's a reason for it. And we'll get into that later. There's some interesting things about it.
Okay.
A lot of people, including myself, thought that the castle was 199 feet tall, but it isn't. It's only 189 feet tall. There are two attractions in Walt Disney World that are 10 feet taller than
the castle.
That are taller than the castle. Do you know which two they may be?
Well, I was going to say, whatchamacallit, the Expedition Everest.
Mount Everest. Expedition Everest, which is one.
Okay.
And there's one other.
One other is taller than the castle. Is it Spaceship Earth?
Nope. You would think it, but no.
Interesting. Give me a park. Is it Tree of Life?
Disney's Hollywood Studios.
Oh, Tower of Terror?
Yep. Yep. Okay. Those are the two that are taller than.
Wow. Took me a little while.
You know, do you want to, here's another, yeah, well, you know, the cobwebs. You want to take a guess as to how much taller Cinderella Castle is in Walt Disney World than Disneyland's Sleeping Beauty Castle?
Wow.
How much taller do you think it is?
What's the height?
Remember, it's 180. Cinderella Castle is 189, and I'll tell you why it's 189 after this
right
little question.
I want to say it's probably like 80 feet taller.
You're close. It's 100 feet taller. Hmm. The Sleeping Beauty Castle is only 89 feet tall, which is interesting. Yeah. So let me explain why the castle was only 189 feet tall. Back in 1971, the FAA said that anything that was taller than 190 feet would require a flashing red aircraft beacon. So The Disney engineer said, okay, we're just going to build at 189 feet. Now, I think that ruling may have increased by 10 feet. So that's why Everest and the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror may be. They're 199, I believe, and right. So, but I guess it's 200 feet now. So that's an interesting thing. So keeping with the castle, Chris. Okay. Some interesting things. Let's talk about the moat around the castle. If I said to you, Chris, how many gallons of water do you think it takes to fill that moat? What would you guess?
I couldn't even begin to guess. More than a toilet bowl flush, definitely.
I'll see if you can come within 500,000 gallons.
I was going to say, it's probably like 30,000 gallons, right? Or something insane. 60,000? 100,000 gallons?
It is insane. It's 3.37 million gallons of water.
Wow.
Which is hard to believe, but that's a lot. Yeah.
That's a big flush.
So keeping that in mind, I want, this is, you know, in preparing for the show, I discovered this little tidbit of information. Why do you think the moat was built?
Why was the moat built?
This is something not many people know.
Well, I definitely don't know. Didn't they have like a swan ride in there? Like you could ride these swan boats?
Yeah, I actually wrote this one. I rode the swan ride back in 1975, I think it
right.
was. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. This is really interesting. The moat was constructed, you ready for this? To eliminate mosquitoes from hanging around the castle.
Oh.
So how did this come about? Well, do you remember General Joe Potter was one of the engineers who helped build Disneyland and Walt Disney World.
Right.
And he was a previous governor of the Panama Canal Zone, and the Panama Canal Zone was infested with malaria carrying mosquitoes. So he worked out a way to eliminate the mosquitoes, and he brought that solution to Walt Disney World. So it's really interesting how we came about. But if you think about what mosquitoes love, they love still water, standing water.
Right.
And so they discovered that if they had constant flowing water, that the mosquitoes would not lay lava, it would be fine. So they built the castle moat to always have, it's always, the water is always flowing. You cannot see it flowing unless you look really closely at the water, but it's constantly moving. So that way there would be no standing water. There'd be no mosquitoes. Now, they also built drainage ditches around there, which we can't see. They're hidden, and they are nicknamed Joe's Ditches. So that was one of the things that they, one of the reasons why they built that moat. Obviously, a moat around a castle is what we all see, but that water is constantly flowing. Here's another interesting thing that particular building, as well as most all the buildings in Walt Disney World, if not all of them, are built so that water flows off of them and it never piles up. It never stands still. Obviously, in Florida, if it rains, you know, once it stops raining, the water just kind of evaporates. But all of the buildings were built so that water kind of runs off and doesn't drain. I know that they built the Spaceship Earth Geosphere for that. But that was another interesting thing. And you know, along this line, I'm all reading about this, and I came across something else that said that even the plants that are used in Walt Disney World are chosen. The plants that are chosen are plants that do not catch water and hold it so that it's standing water so that mosquitoes can thrive. That's why there were no mosquitoes in Walt Disney World. One of the reasons anyways. So I thought that was interesting.
But they do have bears.
They do have bears. That's right. That's right. And it was a honey of a bear.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping with the castle. We've all walked underneath the castle and we've seen those murals. How long do you think it took for them to build those murals?
Oh, wow.
Those mosaic murals underneath the castle. And the reason why I'm asking these questions is that it shows how much care and intricacy was involved in doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
Remember the castle? It took 18 months for them to build the castle.
Yeah, it had to take like 10 months to do the murals, no?
It took almost 2 years to complete.
Whoa.
They used 300,000 pieces of Italian glass. And it's reported that there were more than 500 colors, different shades. Each piece of glass was cut by hand, and it was fused with sterling silver and 14-karat gold. Mm. And some of the tiles were as small as the head of a tack. So that's an interesting trivia question people can ask. 22 months to complete. Over 300,000 pieces of Italian glass, more than 500 colors.
Wow.
Interesting.
Gotta go take a look at them next time there.
It, by the way, I saw this. I thought, I'll throw this in. You can get married in the East Plaza Garden of the Magic Kingdom in front of the castle. But, you know, the bare ones cost is around $25,000. It could be more, but I noticed that in case anybody was interested. Eesh. Okay, here's something that I thought was really cool, and I wish I had known it. All the years that I've gone down there, every single time I've gone to the Magic Kingdom, I did not know this, but next time I go, I'm going to check this out. I want you to tell me what the Roman numeral representation is for the number 4.
So it's an IV.
It's IV. However, if you look at the castle clock, the number 4 is written as I. It's not IV.
Why?
This is not an error because apparently if historians will tell you that for a long time, the number 4 was I until the colonial period, and then it was changed to IV. So the castle is supposed to represent a time prior to the colonial period. So it's I.
Now you sound like you're stuttering.
That's something for everyone to look for. Yeah. Aye, Captain. Now, there are two other places in Walt Disney World where that I appears. One is at the American Adventure Pavilion in Epcot, and the other one is on a clock in Pirates of the Caribbean. I don't know exactly where that clock is, but the next time I'm at the American Adventure or Pirates of the Caribbean, I'm going to look for it. So that was a little interesting thing.
I wonder if it's in the dunking scene, maybe when they're in the square.
Yeah, I that's what I was thinking. So that
I want to take a look.
Something. Maybe I'll do some research and see if I can find out.
Next week, give us the answer.
So we're talking about castles, right? So here's another trivia question for you, Chris.
Okay.
Can you tell me how many castles there are in the Walt Disney World theme parks?
A castle?
How many castles are there as recognized by the Walt Disney Company?
Yeah. I'm going to say six, but there's a trick to this question.
Oh, can you tell me what six?
Well, I'm thinking it's Disneyland, Disney World, Shanghai Disney, Euro Disney. What's the Japanese version? And then Hong Kong.
No, I'm saying Walt Disney World, Chris, not.
Oh, just in Walt Disney World. Oh, I thought you meant the Florida. You said in parks, so that's why I was thinking.
Just Orlando. No.
Oh, the Orlando parks.
Yeah, the Walt Disney World parks, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
How many are there?
Oh, geez. I'm trying to think of any other. I'm thinking, I know this is like a trick question. There's like, it's obviously the Castle of Magic Kingdom. I don't know. Give it to me. I could give me the ones that I wouldn't know. I'm trying to think. There's like Epcot. There's got to be something hiding in there.
You definitely. Well, you know, it's funny because I sort of knew a few of these. I think there was one that I really didn't know. Okay, so first, right off the bat, Cinderella Castle.
Right.
All right. We're gonna stay in the Magic Kingdom. When they expanded the Fantasyland area of the Magic Kingdom,
if you look
just beyond Be Our Guest, way up top, that is Beast's Castle.
Right. I forgot.
That is not Belle's Castle. That is known as Beast's Castle in the Magic Kingdom.
Right.
All right. Moving to the right of that, when you get to the Little Mermaid ride, there's Prince Eric's Castle. That's just outside. So you can see that. Mm-hmm. But the two that people miss the most, and I knew one of them, in Epcot, it will showcase at the Japan Pavilion. That castle is known as the Shirasagio Castle. It's which means white egret. So that's actually a castle. So the Japan Pavilion is actually a castle. And if you think about it, when you walk out of the store, you're kind of walking over a drawbridge. So that is the fourth castle. And the final castle is the Akershus Castle, which is in the Norway Pavilion. I'm not sure I agree with that, but that's what my research shows.
So there's
five castles in Walt Disney World.
And I was so close on the first try. I said six.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
I almost got there by accident.
I have two more.
Okay.
A couple of interesting questions, or maybe even just things to discuss. Okay. How many United States flags are flown in the Magic Kingdom every day?
One.
And where is that one?
Right on Main Street, USA, right in the front there. Everything else is a banner. It's not, right. It doesn't follow the standards of a flag, right?
Yeah, correct. The ones that we see flying are, they don't have 13 stripes and they are missing a few stars. So they're not official United States. Therefore, they do not have to be honored by the United States flag code, which says, inclement weather, you take them down and you have to illuminate them at night. So because they are neither, you know, nothing has to happen. So they keep them up all the time. So I think everybody knew that. I forget the name of the cast member that used to be who ran American Adventure for such a long time. I forget his name, but anyways, I became friends with him and he told me that the flag on top of the, American Adventure is the last rendition of the United States flag in which they were adding stripes for each state. And then they stopped at 13 because if they kept adding more stripes, then you wouldn't see the stripes. But that's an interesting bit of information, too. That's not an up-to-date flag.
Right.
There's a few things that I don't know if I can put these into questions, but
okay. Well, why don't you? You said one more question.
Yep, and then we'll go over some tips. But maybe okay. I could put some of these into okay. questions. So, in the Moroccan pavilion, they that was built by something like 18 artisans that were sent over by the King of Morocco to build a pavilion that looks like, you know, you're actually in Morocco. Mm-hmm. They have cracked tiles in the mosaics in that pavilion, and they're cracked on purpose. Do you want to guess why they're cracked on purpose?
My guess would have been that in case of like shifting like land, they wouldn't fall apart or something. Like it's settled.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that's a valid guess. I don't think anybody would have guessed this unless you knew a lot about the Muslim culture. The Muslim culture, they believe that only Allah can create perfection. Thus,
interesting.
They use cracked tiles. Yeah.
Wow. Excellent.
This isn't a question, Chris, but this is just an interesting fact. You know how we talked about, a forced perspective is, right?
Yes, but enlighten people who may not know.
Yes, let's enlighten. So if you stand in front of the castle, Cinderella Castle, and you look high up, as you go higher up the castle, it looks like the windows are smaller and smaller. And the whole idea there is that they are tricking you into thinking the castle is taller than it actually is. And in fact, if you look at the very top where Tinkerbell flies during the fireworks presentation, the thing is that Tinkerbell is not lit up, illuminated until she is at least 10 feet from the castle, because she's supposed to be a pixie. And if they showed her sitting on that particular window's windowsill, she would dwarf the window. So forced perspective makes us think things are higher than they are. Same thing on Main Street USA, the second story of the mercantile area in Main Street USA, the window's a little bit smaller than they would be in normal life. So keeping that in mind, let's think about the French pavilion, mm-hmm. the France pavilion in Epcot. So when you cross over from England, Great Britain, and you walk over that bridge to France, if you look, you can see some buildings, and you can see the Eiffel Tower behind the buildings. And the Eiffel Tower looks really, really far away.
Right.
So this is really interesting. That's forced perspective. Mm-hmm. What they do is they actually spray that particular structure with bird repellent every morning. They spray it with bird repellent because the forced perspective would be ruined if one of the birds
landed,
decided to land on top of that. Yeah. So that's interesting that they use bird repellent there. Yeah. Let me see two more interesting things. And I don't know if I may have mentioned this to you when we've been in Epcot together, but I always talk to people about this, how the World Showcase designers did is whatever they could to prevent you from looking outside the park. They wanted everyone to be, engulfed in the World Showcase, so they didn't want you to see anything outside. One of the problems was that when they built Hollywood Studios and they built Tower of Terror, they realized that you could see the Tower of Terror from World Showcase, and you can if you stand between World Showcase Plaza and the Mexican Pavilion. There's a certain point where you can actually see the Tower of Terror.
Right.
Realizing this, they decided that the Tower of Terror and the Moroccan Pavilion should have the same colors. So they used that as camouflage. So they used the same colors and they added turrets to both buildings so that they blend with the skyline. So if you line up, you could almost see the Tower of Terror behind the Moroccan Pavilion and they look like they belong together.
Right. So it looks like a building
that's
in the distance.
Interesting thing. Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is that if you've been, I think is it the Yacht Club? No, it's not the Yacht Club. It's Boardwalk. There's a swimming pool, I think at Boardwalk, is it? And or maybe it's the Yacht Beach Club. I don't know. All I know is that they wanted to build a roller coaster when the Beach Club was being designed. The problem is that they wanted it to be a wooden roller coaster, which had to be of a certain height And when they did, when they ran a balloon, a weather balloon or whatever, to see how tall it would be, they discovered that it would be seen from inside Epcot. So they squashed that that idea. So they very, very, very much keep in mind that they don't want anybody to, they don't want their guests to see anything that's outside the park.
Right.
The last interesting fact that I thought would be good to, for everyone to hear is that in the Italy pavilion, where they make pizza, forget the name of that place.
Via Napoli?
Via Napoli, they import water to use when they make pizza.
Really?
But they do not import it from Italy. They import water from Pennsylvania. They ship water in from Pennsylvania because apparently the acidic level in water in Pennsylvania is similar to that water that's in Naples.
Interesting.
So in trying to be authentic, they use water in Via Napoli that is similar to
authentic, Naples, but not as expensive, right? Yeah. So you can't go to Italy to get it. So you get somewhere else that's cheaper.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of funny. So that's basically some of the interesting things.
I love the trivia stuff.
That I think it's interesting. I'll try to
keep on
from time to time come up with some more things. Yeah. It's interesting. And again, some people may have known some of those things. So let's finish off with some thoughts about some tips. I think that more and more so, I think people are concerned about making the most of their time and money while they're in Walt Disney World. The last couple of years, things have changed. I do think that for those who really are in a time crunch, they need to consider Genie Plus and Lightning Lane. But keeping that in mind, I think that it's important to be an early bird when deciding what you're going to do that particular day at that particular park. And usually it's around 7 o'clock that that we have found the best time to open up that Disney Genie Plus and find out, you know, what's available and how much it's going to cost. And if the price is okay, 7 o'clock is the time to do it. Otherwise, it may take all day for you to get into that particular attraction, be it Rise of the Resistance or Tron or Guardians or whatever. So I think that that's important to keep in mind. I particularly am not crazy about Lightning Lane and Genie Plus, but
for some those people find it useful. So
it's a one and done visit. I don't think I'd pay $20 to go on Tron though.
I mean,
anyways,
you do it once, so you might want to do it that way. But
yeah, I agree. We have found that mobile ordering through My Disney Experience, boy, that works really well, Chris. And if you're having a tough time finding someplace to eat, I think that that's a great option to use. Here's another tip. Sometimes it's just hard to find things in Magic Kingdom to eat. So we have found that the Contempo Cafe in the Contemporary Hotel, that's a pretty good place to eat. And it's not crowded during the day. So I think for families that want to take a break from the hustle bustle of the park, they should take a walk over to the Contemporary and try the Contempo Cafe. I think it's I think you get a good deal. You get a very good value for your food. I think the quality is very good.
Awesome.
And regarding meals and stuff, I've been talking about this for years, and I'm sure you subscribe to the same philosophy, and that is that the earlier you are in meal times, the better off you're going to be in getting a table. For instance, there are some restaurants within Walt Disney World that start serving lunch at 10:30 to maybe 2:30 or 3 o'clock. I think the early times is a good deal, especially if you can, let's say you want to go into the parks and you want to do something really early and then you want to eat early. That's a good idea. Also, for those restaurants that begin dinner at 4:30, try to get an early date. It's really worthwhile. And if you get hungry later on, you can get a snack.
Yeah.
So I think that that's something that everybody should keep in mind. And finally, I talk about many years ago, I used to say that you want to be at the turnstiles 30 minutes before the turnstiles are supposed to, let you in. But by the same token, I also want to say that it's also a good idea to be a night owl. And that is, if you can manage to stay up within an hour of closing of the parks, you might be able to do quite a few attractions for that last hour. Because number one, if it's late, you're going to have young families are going to be gone. A lot of people want to beat the traffic. So if you can hang on for that last hour, you can really have a great time. And one of the things that Michelle and I love to do is we love to walk through Galaxy's Edge at night when no one's around.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's really quite a treat. So that's some of the things that I was thinking of to ease the stress of going to Walt Disney World and trying to figure out how to make the most of your time, money, and stuff like that.
Awesome. Well, I guess that's going to do it for us today. If you enjoy our show, let us know. So on behalf of Mike Scopa, I'm Chris Eliopoulos. We'll see you on the road and in the park.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.
Oh my God, why am I blanking on the name? Kilimanjaro Safaris? What? Not Kilimanjaro. What's the big giant mountain? What's it called? What's the ride called?
Big Thunder?
No. In Space Animal Mountain? Kingdom. In Animal Kingdom, it's... you go, oh my God, why am I so... like? I am now it's my turn to have senior moments. The big giant mountain.
We needed
mountain.
An ending for the show anyway.
No. Well,
two attractions, 10 feet taller.
What is the roller coaster with the dead Yeti?
Everest.
Everest.